So welcome everyone, and thank you for coming out on this stormy night. So what I'd like to do tonight is, rather than give a formal talk, is really just talk with you. Because again, I think it's really important, at least it's important for me to know that that what I'm talking to you about is really beneficial for you. And sometimes while we enjoy the Dharma talks, but often we enjoy them like sermons, you know, and you know what sermons are worth. They're usually, they're not even good for 24 hours usually. So not wanting to fall into that trap, I would much rather kind of respond to really what your questions are about life, practice, your study or readings in Buddhism, just really kind of what's really up for you, and how we can shine some light light on that. I'd like to respond to you and help in any way I can. So please, and again, I haven't given a talk here in a while. I'm sure you've been carrying on without me, and there have probably been interesting talks and discussions, and maybe there's some leftovers from those talks and discussions, things that aren't clear. Always the question is, how do I apply this in my daily life? How do I apply it to my own healing and transformation, to my relationships, to my work, to my society? Again, you know, we practice what's called engaged Buddhism, which means it's a spiritual practice that does not separate itself at all from the reality challenges of a daily life. And we want to, all our study of teachings, spiritual teachings, Buddhist teachings, all our practice that we do by ourselves or on the mat or at Sangha like this or other groups, they only become meaningful when we really see change going on in our daily life. And often that's where the breakdown is. You know, we sort of get it when we're here, or we get it on the cushion, or we get it when we're reading, but when we're in, you know, the challenges and the pace of daily life, and especially where we often run into our conditioning, the way we've always done things, then it becomes more challenging. So I'm very interested in talking with you tonight. So please, when you have a question or something, please just put your hands like this and we'll talk. And don't be shy. I mean, many people are shy and we waste, you know, many people, they waste their lifetime being shy. It's a waste. You know, this life is short. It is unpredictable. We have very limited time when we are together, and we don't. We say we will meet again, but we don't know if that is true. So that being the case, we should use our time together in a meaningful way. So I'm open for anything.
Well, I'll break the ice. I had a three-day retreat, solo retreat.
Can anybody hear Dave?
Well, yeah. And it was a wonderful experience. I felt Fred, in a very loving, kind way, challenged me in a number of thoughts. I mean, I can only give you one quick example. This happened in the first 5-10 minutes that we were talking, and that alone was worth it to me. You know, I've had many people tell me, particularly people close to me, say, "Dave, you're too hard on yourself." And I kind of, I've heard that, but I wondered what that meant. Well, Fred explained what that meant when he said, "Look, Dave, there's this thought construct up here that you see, that you think is yourself or what you should be doing. This is you right here. and it may or may not, get this. Stop having this up here and using that to judge yourself. Look at it, say, rationally, rather than just emotionally, instead of feeling bad every time you don't do something you think you should do. That was very enlightening for me to see it in those terms. And it gave me some fundamental chance this week to think about some things. I noticed, first of all, my sense of humor was much better. I just wasn't up there doing this all the time. So anyway, I thank you.
Thank you, Dave. It was fun having you in residence for 3 days. But yeah, the point Dave made is so simple, but it seems to be a prevalent, highly prevalent disease and a shared delusion among our society. That somehow, at some early stage in our life, we kind of exited this, you know, this meaning kind of just who we are. We kind of, for whatever reason, it wasn't safe to be that, or it didn't get rewarded, or we knew that we could get love, or whatever, by being something else. But it's almost like we exited ourself and became something out here. Some kind of as if we are looking at ourselves from the outside, always judging, evaluating, comparing, assessing, you know, how we're doing. And that this doesn't matter, but this matters. The problem, of course, is what? This doesn't really exist. This exists. This doesn't exist. This is just this creation, this mind creation, right? Made up of thoughts and images and memories and feelings, but has no reality other than that. And so we live here. We live for that, rather than living for this. And that's quite pernicious, isn't it? It is it was wonderful to help Dave come back into himself and let go of this. Because the promise of this is always what? The promise of this assessing, comparing voice is somehow, if you conform to what I'm telling you, right, then you'll be what? What? Okay, happy, safe. But it doesn't work, does it? Because this thing is never satisfied. It never stops. So it's important to see that and to be free of that. And especially when it's not real. Not real in Buddhism means it's not, there's no solid entity there. It's just thoughts conditioned by the past, by this and that, that we've kind of coalesced, imagining that it's real. I mean, do other people have this thing that you have that thing, yeah. So it's important that with our mindfulness and our awareness and our capacity to stop and look deeply, you see, it's almost as if there has been this voice inside you telling you what to do, telling you who you should be, telling you how you should act, and then always, even as you're doing it, giving you a running, right? Kind of a running commentary on how you're doing. Can you see how unreal that is? Right? because we live in the commentary on ourselves rather than in ourselves. And so that capacity to finally stop and using your mindfulness and awareness to stop and look right at that voice. What is that voice? You know, we've always listened to it, but we've never stopped and turned to really look at it. Is there really somebody there? As obviously whoever's there thinks they're pretty good, right? They obviously think they're better than me, because they're always telling me how I should be doing it. So they're kind of a one big know-it-all, aren't they? But, yes. Yes, Whitney.
As a doctoral student, this is resonating very, very deeply with me.
Very what?
Very, very deeply, and a lot, just because I find myself in this situation pretty much in the last 9 months, constantly trying to evaluate how I'm doing and entering a new profession. It's like I have these supervisors who are always kind of helping me learn and teaching me things, and I'm always thinking, like, am I doing this correctly? Am I doing that correctly? Am I doing what they would want me to do? So anyway, just to say that I've been living in that in the last 9 months, and actually the last week or two started really looking at that, because I had somewhat of a breakdown a week or two ago and really started looking at this and thinking, am I really going to be able to do this? Am I really going to be able to be responsible for the hearing healthcare of little children? And then I realized as I stopped worrying about this and just really paid attention to just what I was doing and took some more deep breaths and relax about it and just basically stop worrying about it, it just felt better. And just sort of relax into my role and not stressing about it as much, and just easier that way.
You're absolutely right, Whitney, and don't stop there. Because that difference between life, like you're saying, you're learning a skill, you're learning a profession, you're learning right. So you're learning, and so it's really just about skills and competencies, and right. That's really all it is, isn't it? And obviously somebody must have thought you were objectively competent to enter that field, because they did accept you, and obviously they passed you along. So, I mean, you do have people objectively assessing from a professional point of view, right? And that's really all that's going on.
Right.
But then you notice there's something else, right?
Yeah.
This Whitney, and she's making all this all about her,
right,
and how she is. And you see how the pernicious self, right, enters Whitney's life as if she wasn't stressed enough, right?
Yeah.
And starts creating drama.
Right? I found, though, that that's, once I let go of that, my job isn't terribly stressful in and of itself, just that was like 90% of my coming home and just needing to relax and not think about it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Having myself wound up.
Yeah. Well, that's very significant, right? That when you you say, when I look at the stress in my life, quote unquote, 10% of it is reality based and 90% of it is self-created. That's pretty accurate. And that's significant, because that really means that that really you have control over 90% of that kind of negative energy in your mind, which we call stress. Good. Yes, Amda.
I had a question about the seeds that Thich Nhat Hanh talks about, that go that we accumulate beginning as children. They're passed along even into the womb. I read Thich Nhat Hanh say from ancestors and even from our parents and how they are reacting in the world, and it's all these seeds are coming to us. And I feel like the self that always gives me a lot of problems wants to make this a problem for me.
Wants to make what a problem for you?
Another problem. The problem will be that I've got all these negative seeds. You know, alcoholic parents, you know, and poverty and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And so the self, I think I am, tells me, oh, you've got a harder road to hoe. You know, I've got all these seeds and...
But have you noticed, just parenthetically, that this self of yours probably always has been giving you those kinds of messages?
Always, yes.
Okay, so the interesting thing about these conditioned selves of ours with their skewed beliefs about themselves in the world is that they are fairly consistent, no matter where you take them, right? They're always telling you the same stuff.
That's true.
And whether you're taking them, you know, to the worst part of life, or whether you're entering the spiritual realm of a Dharma community, and you know what I'm saying? It will tell you the same thing, which is what? You're never good enough. It's never going to change. You're always going to suffer.
Yes.
Right? That's it.
Yeah.
Yep. So it's very consistent.
Yes, it is.
Okay. So that's your conditioning. And again, what she's referring to is a wonderful book. Anda's in this intensive on deconstructing the myth of self, and we're reading this very profound book on sort of Buddhist psychology, Buddhist depth psychology, by Thich Nhat Hanh, called Understanding Our Mind, and where he talks about the fundamentals of Buddhist psychology, of which we have our seeing consciousness, our hearing, and the five sense consciousness, and our thinking mind. And then at the seventh level, we have this thing called manas, which is this self-consciousness of self. And then underneath that is this what's called the storehouse consciousness. And in Buddhist psychology, all the seeds of experience, everything we have ever experienced as a seed potential, goes down into this storehouse. And so within this storehouse are all the seeds of everything, positive and negative, right? And they are just always, they are coming up into consciousness sometimes when situations trigger it, right? So like Whitney talked about the situation at work or at school and how this these seeds of self-doubt or whatever, you know, from her past kind of came into that situation, latched on and kind of gave it a twist. But you know, you can just be sitting. And things will just keep coming up into the mind, right? Well, where are they coming from? They're coming from your storehouse consciousness, a lot of it. If you want to wear this, and in dreams and all this, it's all coming from there. Okay, so you have these seeds. You have seeds from childhood, seeds from your parents, seeds from your first, second grade. You have all these seeds from your whole life, and positive and negative. But you know, you have seeds of suffering, but you have seeds of compassion. You have seeds of understanding. You have seeds of patience because you've done everything, okay? And so when you realize you have these seeds, of which they're there, you cannot do anything about them other than accept them in this moment, that's what's there. Okay? It's like, let's say somebody, you inherited a house, right? Free and clear. But when you get to the house, you see it's a fixer-upper.
Yeah.
All right? You know what I mean? It's a fixer-upper. So you own it, but it needs some work. But if you know how to fix things up, right? And if you have a little vision, you can walk into that house that even it could be a mess, and go, I can rip out this, and I can tear out that, and I can replace this, and right. So it's not a great source of suffering to you. It's a source of I understand what I got, but I also know how to transform it, and I have a vision of how I want it to be. Right? You know, somebody else will walk in there and see a fixer-upper and go, what? But they don't see any potential. They don't see the ability to transform.
Yeah.
But somebody who has that vision and those skills can walk into that place and go, oh, you know, good bones. You know, I can create something beautiful here. So it's like that. You know, when you stop running, stop deceiving, stop denying, stop repressing, stop projecting, stop fantasizing, right? Stop ruminating, stop, you know, and you get real, and you go, and you take just a very unvarnished look at your life and who you are and the seeds of positive and negative, and this is where you begin. This is your fixer-upper, right? And again, the teachings, the Dharma, are the ways of how to work with these seeds. Mm-hmm. And the seeds are, you know, it's like seeds are great, because seeds means it's a little thing, but it has the potential to grow into a big thing. Right? That's what a seed is. And so to say that you have the seeds of suffering doesn't mean that they have to be potentized, right? If there are seeds that you do not want to grow, don't water them, right? You see, when we don't know about seeds, when we don't know about our storehouse consciousness, it's like Dave was saying, he has these seeds all his life of self-criticism or unworthiness, right? Mm-hmm. And because he didn't understand that those were just seeds in him, he unconsciously, his whole life, has been watering them, right? Like every time you do it and you think it and you take it out, they get watered. So they get very strong because they've been watered. So they grow. They're seeds. They get watered, they grow. So once you get it, hopefully from now on, even though those conditioned type way of thinking may arise for Dave, now that he sees more clearly, he won't water them. If they're not watered, they don't grow. Right? So Anda has that choice to acknowledge those seeds of suffering in herself and to stop watering them. Stop giving them play. Stop giving them rumination. And okay?
Yeah.
At the same time, she has other seeds. Seeds of transformation, seeds of understanding, seeds of compassion, seeds of conscious intention, seeds of mindfulness, right? She has lots of, and hopefully those seeds, she's going to be spending more time watering. Oh. Seeds, again, is a very powerful symbol. You know, they find seeds in Egyptian tombs, don't they? That still have the potential of growing. I mean, that's pretty amazing, right? So we all have these seeds, and even if we have not watered them for a long time, when we begin to water them, they will grow. because the in a seed is the potentiality of life. So, because in Buddhist psychology nothing is fixed, everything's impermanent, everything is changing, that even you understand that this storehouse consciousness and all these seeds are always just coming and going, and if you learn to handle them skillfully, things will change. And that voice, you know, you have a voice like Dave, always giving you the wrong information. Have you noticed that?
Yes.
Yeah. See, it's amazing to me, because when people tell me about these voices in their heads that are always telling them terrible things, you know, I go, why do you listen to them? You know what I mean? I mean, who would want to be, you know, who would like to be around a voice like that? Right? You know? I mean, if I had somebody in my life and they were constantly telling me critical things or negative things all the time, I mean, I would lose that person quickly, wouldn't you?
Yes.
Huh? Yeah, I mean, who would? And yet we just take this thing around with us and listen to it every time it talks, as if it's speaking the truth. So it's very important that we see clearly. You know, at a deeper level, next time you hear this voice, just look around in your mind, look right at it, and see what you see. See if there's really anybody there. You may be surprised that all it is what?
Just a thought,
just a disembodied voice. You know, I used to be a mental health professional. People who listen to the commands of disembodied voices in their heads, that's usually called psychotic. We would say, oh, that person's not in reality. They're hearing voices in their head and they're listening to them and thinking they're real. Right? In Florida, we Baker Act people like that. And yet the truth is, many of us have voices in our head that are giving us a lot of misinformation, and we do listen to them. So we have to be very careful. Other questions about practice in life? Yes.
I have a very amateurish question.
Good, those are the best.
Because I'm pretty much brand new.
Good.
What is a reasonable practice period on a daily basis for someone in a busy life, like morning and evening? What's a reasonable period?
You're talking about like for meditation?
Yeah.
Yeah. Again, we're all different, so you got to start where you are. The main thing is to look for consistency. Because you want, you know, in the same way at a certain time in your life, your parents tried to get you to learn to brush your teeth every day, right? And it might not have made a lot of sense to you at the time, but if your parents were persistent because they felt it was good for you, you know, things like that, right? So over time, we learn there are certain things that are just good for us, right? And obviously, brushing our teeth, bathing or wearing clean clothes are sort of obvious, or eating regularly. But meditation is also very important, right, for our mental and physical well-being. And so we want to kind of bring it into our life so it's part of our life, like all these other things we do. And so so it is better probably to be consistent 5 minutes every day than, 30 minutes one day, 20 minutes the next day, an hour the next day, nothing for 4 days, better get back into it. you know what I'm saying? There's really not much benefit from that. Right, so you want, you want to develop consistency and then kind of develop that. And to start, with a time period that is comfortable for you. You know, if after 10 or 15 minutes you feel like you're just going crazy or something, or you can't, then it's probably a good time to stop. Right? I mean, if you can sit 20, I mean, I would say most people who work and everything, you know, if you can sit 20, 30 minutes, it's probably a good period. You know, once or twice a day, if possible. Many people obviously tend to meditate early in the morning or at night, just because our days are filled up with activity. And so, first thing in the morning before things get going, if you notice when you say to yourself, well, let me just do a few things and then I'll go meditate, what happens? Right, so... Again, there are many things that are good for us. That when we are rational and objective, we know they're good for us, right? And so we need to implement them in our life from that perspective of, I know they're good for me, and so therefore I'm going to do this. That's called discipline. If you meditate, or really anything that you want to develop some proficiency at, if you base your involvement on how you're feeling, you will find out that that's not a very good basis for bringing anything consistent, because often what you feel like doing may not be what's really best for you. Because often what you feel like doing is based on your historical conditioning. That's what. So so if you only do your meditative practice or whatever practice you do when you feel like it, it will be very inconsistent and probably, again, not very beneficial. Again, meditation, like exercise, like eating, like all kinds of things, are something that we understand from reflection is good for us. And therefore, we do it. In the same way, there may be things that, upon reflection, we know are not good for us, not healthy for us. And so we stop doing them, even though the impulse in the moment to go do them. So it works on both sides. And what that really means is we want to stop running our life from conditioning. Conditioning means the past, the way we've always done it. Our conditioning, our childhood stuff, our impulses, it's all historical. There's no freedom in that. There's only endless repetition. So we want to become conscious beings. Conscious beings means we are aware and we can see clearly choices in life, and we can see the results of choices. And so we can consciously move our life consciously move our life in the direction that we want, that we know is good for us, or congruent with our values, our aspiration, and move away from those things that are clearly negative for us, that do not produce meaning, right, or happiness or value. And that only comes from someone who is conscious, who's not asleep at the wheel. And to be asleep at the wheel means that we are just lost in our reactive historical nature, right? Endlessly repeating the past. And like Ananda says, and feeling like there's no way to break out of that, but that's not true. It's just conditioning, they're just seeds. And so... anything on your mind? It's not clear. Ista. Ista.
Going to be a bit stupid question.
Good. See, that was your conditioning. You hear her? Did you hear her?
Yes.
What? See, that's that. There she is. You want to ask a question, right?
Yes.
And she's over here going what?
Just It's going to be
you're stupid. Yeah, can you see her? And that's it, you gotta look at her and
yeah.
Stop bothering me. You know what I mean? You don't have to get angry with her.
Yeah.
You don't have to get frustrated. Yeah. Just you can laugh at her, silly, silly girl.
Well, I just wonder if a change, is it better when you do very abrupt change for real transformation?
Say that again, if you do what?
Change.
Yeah.
For, you know, like real change. I feel I do a little every day and it's mm-hmm. not enough. I feel it's not enough transformation for
mm-hmm,
me.
Mm-hmm.
It's, I mean, I kind of, there is no meaning for me. I start to feel like I don't know who I am anymore. But
well, that's so. I'm hearing two questions. One is,
well,
No, you're not. Just slow down. So you want one thing is you say, how can I kind of accelerate or speed up my transformation? I don't think it's really deep enough. And the other thing is you're saying you're kind of not sure who you are.
Yes. So the first thing, if I really want to transform myself,
mm-hmm.
wouldn't it be better to do some extreme changes, for example, go to a monastery for 3 months or so and really, you know, get the habits going
mm-hmm.
and then maybe come back? Because I just feel if I do it little by little, it's very inconsistent. You know, one day, well, even if I try to do it every day at the same time, I still feel it's not enough. I just feel.
Well, again, I mean, I would say to that, you know, we all have different situations in life. Different responsibilities, different roles. You know, is transformation possible as a layperson in daily life? Absolutely. But is it true that when you're on your own, you know what I mean, in work and everything, where you're not getting a lot of support and structure, is it more challenging than if you were in an environment like going on retreat or going to, you know, where the whole environment is supportive of your transformation and you're doing 2 or 3 hours of meditation every day? Obviously, yeah, that would be, again, in terms of the seed work, you know, you're getting a much more directive kind of working on your transformation. So again, you're saying if you have the freedom and the time and the opportunity to go on retreat. I mean, you know, in our community we hold retreats, you know, but they're 3, 4, 7 days. There are certain residential places you can go for 30-day retreats or 90-day retreats, right? As well as there are kind of monastic or other situations where you can just go live in those kinds of environments. So yeah, that can be, you know, very wonderful because it, you know, you kind of throw yourself into it. And yeah. So that's good if you have that opportunity. And the second question is, you don't know who you are anymore. I would say to that, how wonderful. Okay. Because when you thought you knew who you were, that was probably just your conditioned you, right?
Yes.
All the ways you thought you should be and act, and right? And then at a certain point, that stopped working for you, didn't it? Mm. You realized there was somebody else in there.
Yes, but I don't know who that
is. Good, so that's good. Easter, let's try that again. Easter. I keep calling you Easter, and your name is Easter. Easter. The question, who am I, really, is a profound spiritual question. It is one of the key questions, right, to know who you really are. In Zen, there is these things called koans, and there is a koan that says, what was my original face before my mother was born? It's a very powerful, because it acknowledges, you know, before, because we take on our conditioning when we come, you know, out of our mother. We enter this world of conditioning, of being. You're given a name, Aista, and all of a sudden you're formed. But before you were conditioned, who were you? Who are you? That's what, you know, what is my original face before my parents were born? So that's a very deep journey, right? You don't have to panic. You don't have to be confused. You can say, you know, I used to think I knew who I was, right? I was Aista. I was born where?
Lithuania.
I'm Aista from Lithuania, right? And this is where I was born, and this is, right? And that, and you could tell those stories, and you thought that was you.
Yeah.
Now you're not so sure.
No.
Good, right? You're not sure that you are a story. You think you may be more than that. And so you want to find out, right? So that's a journey. So that's okay. You know? Right? You don't have to feel like you're confused. You can feel, yeah, that sounds very clear, right? I used to think I knew who I was, and then I realized I really don't know who I am, but I'm on a journey now to really find out. Does that sound confused?
No.
No, it sounds very clear.
Yeah,
you really are clear. Who told you you were confused? Must have been that voice you had. Gotta watch out for that one. Always giving you the wrong message, right? Any is that, was that your question?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
We stop at what time?
8:30.
Oh, okay. So I guess we should stop. Did you? No. Any last minute questions?